previously on Willing to Adapt. Today we're going to be discussing the book The Outsiders and the movie by S.E. Hinton. And I hated it. I hated the book.
S.E. Hinton irrevocably altered the course of juvenile literature in America with her first novel, The Outsiders. It was published when she was 17 and was her stark answer to the fluffy high school stories about proms and dates typical of the 1960s. She said, "Where is reality?" Her story was real, graphic, emotional, and true to the challenges of being a teenager in 20th century America.
It was one of those books that grew on me as I read it this time around.
The novel is the story of a traumatic time in the life of a recently orphaned 14-year-old boy named Ponyboy Curtis. The story explores the themes of class conflict, affection, brotherly love, and coming of age in a way that young people readily appreciate. And so there was a while where I even asked my parents, I'm like, what would I have to do to bleach my hair? And they're like, why would you want to bleach your hair? Obviously, there are schools out there who ban it and don't like it for, like, the graphic nature and the language.
Despite not liking it as a kid, I'm glad it's still taught.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Welcome back to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And this is Romy Reyes.
This is the second part of our The Outsiders podcast episode.
Yes.
And so we're excited for this one. We're going to talk about the 1983 film by Francis Ford Coppola of the same name. If you have not listened to the first episode in this, please go back and listen to it. We talk a lot about S.E. Hinton and the book and what we feel about the book and a lot of insight and all that fun stuff. It'll give you some information that'll be helpful for this episode. But without further ado, Romy, when was the first time you watched this movie?
The first time I watched it was in high school. But as I think I mentioned in the last episode, I don't remember it.
Okay.
Except for one scene. One scene.
One scene that you misremembered.
Kind of, yeah. I could have sworn there was more to it or something different. But it was of Patrick Swayze in kind of a rundown house, sitting on a couch.
No, that's the whole movie.
And so I kept waiting for that scene, and that's all I remembered from the movie. Nothing else did I remember from it. So,
isn't that the plot of Ghost?
Probably. It was a rewatch, but in many ways it was the first time I rewatched it again.
And what did you think?
I mean, it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. It was kind of like watching the Sunday movie on back in the 80s, 90s, except it would have been edited.
I mean, you could argue the film sanitizes quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. No, it does. But it was good. I appreciated it having reread the book. And it was kind of cool seeing all the different actors young.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let me give a quick information about the film here.
Go ahead.
Like I said, it was directed by Francis Ford Coppola. It featured a cast of young actors who soon became household names, including C. Thomas Howell as Ponyboy, Matt Dillon as Dallas, Ralph Macchio as Johnny, Patrick Swayze as Derry, Rob Lowe as Soda Pop, and Emilio Estevez as Two-Bit, and Tom Cruise as Steve. Among the greasers, they also had Diane Lane as Cherry Valance, and Leif Garrett as her boyfriend Bob. Fun fact, the film was dedicated to a school librarian, Jo Ellen Misakian, and her students at a school in Fresno, California. In 1980, Misakian and her students had written to Coppola to suggest he make a film version of their favorite book, which was The Outsiders. The film premiered to mixed reviews. The New York Times called it spectacularly out of touch and laughably earnest. But it successfully launched the careers of several of its young stars. It has since become considered a classic film, similar to other films of the Brat Pack generation. Yeah, but it basically got made because a teacher in Fresno, California, and all her students sent a letter and a copy of the book to Francis Ford Coppola asking him to make it, and he read it and loved it.
I thought it was interesting, though, that the fact that the credits were at the beginning.
Yes, this was still a thing then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So early 80s, that was still kind of...
Yeah, and I think it was the 90s that it started to transition away to the other end, because I think the idea is they didn't want to lose the audience.
Oh, okay. And then the other thing, too, was the... I really stuck out to me was the special effects were very 70-ish.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's 83, so it's still really early. It definitely felt more 70s, especially when you have Stevie Wonder singing the song.
Yeah, I know. That did not work for me.
No, but I don't like Stevie Wonder, so...
Oh, okay. I like some of his stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, I think the idea was... It used to be required that the credits were at the beginning of films, in part because they wanted people to know who made the film.
Oh, okay.
And so if you put them at the end, as is the case now, people would usually just leave. Yeah. Well, the budget for the film was $10 million, and it made in the box office $25.7
million. Okay.
So it did decently well. Mm-hmm. It made money back and more. And like I said, it's most noticeable for its ensemble cast, because a lot of these actors went on to do a lot after this. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, it was not star-studded, but it now is viewed that way.
Yeah.
It received mostly positive reviews, but it also got some mixed reviews.
You know who else was in it? As an uncredited greaser, I believe? Or Soch, I can't remember.
Who?
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah, I heard something about that. Yeah. Yeah, he was really early on, though.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing
it. It might have been one of those that, like, he got cut out.
Maybe. He was on the IMBD. That's the only reason I saw it.
Yeah. As we said in the first episode, the movie, it's about an hour and a half, but it moves pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts some stuff from the book. Mm-hmm. And we found out that was because of the studio.
Yes.
So Francis Ford Coppola had actually filmed basically everything in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it came time to release it, the studio was worried that it was running too long and it was slow, and that the fans of the books wouldn't like it. And so they cut it down for time.
Well, the original version cut down for time.
Yeah. Well, then they created the director's cut later. Yeah.
Do you think it's worth watching, the director's cut?
Here's the thing. I'll say this now. I watched this when I was in eighth grade. I remember everyone loving this movie, in part because of the actors in it, and this was kind of my introduction to a lot of 80s stuff at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly my aunts loved this movie, but because of the actors.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the movie.
Okay.
I appreciate it, mm-hmm. and like I'd probably watch it again at some point, maybe, but I'm not a big fan of it. I do like the director's cut a bit more.
Okay.
But I do agree with the studio that it does feel like it does slow down and feels a little long.
Okay.
It's funny because I watched the director's cut a couple years ago, and it had not been since maybe my freshman year of high school that I had watched the original version.
Mm.
And so it had been a long time. And so when I was watching the director's cut, I was like, what was added in? This just feels like the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I watched the movie this time around, I realized how much they had cut out.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, there you go. The biggest thing they cut out is the opening bit where Ponyboy gets jumped and you meet the gang.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I was watching it this time around, I was like, wait, does this come later? Did they cut it? They cut it. Okay, got it. And so it's one of those things where, like, it's not necessary to the plot, except I think it helped a lot with introducing the gang but the issues between the Soches and the greasers.
Okay.
I would say if you enjoy the book and you want to see the book come to life more, mm-hmm. then watch the director's cut.
Okay.
Because the director's cut is the book.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. He really does not add anything that's not in the book.
Mm.
There's like small bits, like some lines and things. Like, obviously the part with Essie Hinton in it as the nurse where she's like, what did you do with your scrubs? And he's like, I threw them away. And she's like, I can't wait till you're out of here. Like, obviously, that's not in the book.
Yeah.
But it's characteristic to Dallas that it makes sense, you know. But there wasn't like any events added to the book, from the book to the movie or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I will automatically say that this is a true to source material adaptation.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to wait for that one. But if you like the book and you want to see it come to life, then watch the director's cut.
Okay.
If you just want to get a feel of the book
and
have it streamlined a bit, the original 83 version is fine.
Okay.
I think, though, the biggest problem that the original 83 version has, and I think is still kind of in the director's cut, is a lot of Ponyboy's growth is missing.
Well, yeah, because his monologue is all pretty much all gone.
Yeah. But even, we talked in the last episode a bit about this, that the story is really Ponyboy's kind of coming of age and maturation and, you know, emotional maturity especially. But, like, losing, not losing who he is, essentially.
Yes.
And so you lose a lot of that in the movie. Because in the movie, it's just a lot of stuff happens to him almost. And then he just kind of reacts. In the book, you can see how Ponyboy loses sight of who he is. And he declines in the latter half of the book, especially. Like, he just hardens himself and just kind of grows numb.
Yeah.
And so he's, like, not even scared of the Socias anymore. Like, he just breaks a bottle and comes at them. And
it's anger.
Yeah. And so you can see how, in a way, he was becoming like Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, having characters like Derry and Two-Bit and other people telling him, like, this isn't you. Don't be like this. You can be so much more, and you've got so much beauty in you, and you see things we don't see, and things like that. And obviously the biggest catalyst for him to get back on track and to grow as a person is that letter from Johnny.
Yeah.
And I think that's what helps him to, like, let go and to grow and to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Grow into the man he's going to be, you know, slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And that's not in the movie. Like, you can say there's traces of it, but you have to look for it to find it.
Yeah.
And I would say in the director's cut, it's more in there, but because you're not in his head as much, it's harder to see.
Yeah, no, it's more of, you're watching as a outside observer. Yeah. Watching everything
unfold. You do get a lot more of his narration, though, in the director's cut.
Yeah, and you don't get to see a lot of his perspective. I mean, you kind of do, but not the same way.
I wanted to throw this in here real quick because I don't know where else to put it.
Go ahead.
So, Essie Hinton was on set a lot for the filming, and she grew to really know Francis Ford Coppola and all the main characters, the main actors. And so, even today, like, she's still in communication with them and stuff. There's a few things, like with Rob Lowe especially, that there's some funny stories. One of them is a little sad, and I'll say that one first, is during filming, he had asked her what happens to Soda Pop after the book. And this sounds like her because she's very matter of fact. She told him that he was drafted to Vietnam and he died.
Oh, wow.
Because she's very realistic.
Yeah.
Like, and she tries to be realistic. And so she's like, that's what happened. So it's kind of sad, but real.
I could see it happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing that I thought was funny is in the bit before the rumble, this is more funny. In the bit before the rumble, he was nervous because he had to do that, like, handstand thing. I don't remember. One of them had to do a handstand, like the flip, right?
Yeah, and they're on their way.
Yeah. They do the flip off a car. And he was nervous because he went up to her and he said he, like, ate too much at like, the last meal. And so he wasn't feeling very well. And he was worried about doing it because he didn't think he could do it right. And she asked him, would it help if you threw up? And he said, maybe. And so she took him out by the food cart, like, where they, like, they feed everyone on set.
Yeah.
And she gave him basically a bunch of raw eggs. And then he threw up. And then he felt better. And then he said he was able to do the shot. And so, like, it's so funny because, like, in interviews, like, she's so chill. But then you hear these stories and you're like, yeah, there's That's more funny. To this woman. Did you find what you're looking for?
I did. So I was going through some of the reviews I had seen on it in regards to the difference between the book and the movie. And one of the things I think that was kind of summed up by someone I read, they said that they felt that the film, or many people kind of aggregately felt that the film compresses the timeline.
Oh, for sure.
And streamlines the plot to fit in a cinematic format, focusing more on action and key emotional beats. This makes the movie feel faster paced, but less introspective. That's not what I was looking for. Sorry, wrong paragraph. So that's part of it. But the other one was the film has a more polished cinematic feel with a dramatic score and stylized visuals. Some viewers find the movie's tone slightly theatrical compared to the book's raw realism, though the complete novel edition aligns more closely with the book's grit. And that was something I agreed with, you know, and watching it. I mean, one, you could kind of tell just Coppola has...
He has a style.
He has a style. And
I mean, he's got some beautiful shots.
No, he does, yeah. But they're the shots were not part of my imagination yeah. and picturing the book come to life.
Sure.
I think when I'm reading the book, yes, they're thinking of the sunset. You know, they're thinking of all this stuff in the picture, the church, and mm-hmm. like in my mind, the church looked a lot nicer than what it looked there. I pictured this kind of slightly
run
down.
It might have been more accurate in the movie, though.
Okay, yeah, you know, but still, it's. I pictured in my mind the whole book did have a stronger, grittier feel,
mm-hmm.
and the movie I felt was
I would say
definitely more cinematic.
I wouldn't necessarily, maybe for you, mm-hmm. but for me, I wouldn't say gritty. I would say just slower.
Mm.
It had a very real feel to it.
It did, yeah.
Like the book, it felt like, you know, like a lot of times, because even though there's a lot of weird time jumps and stuff in the book where it explains a lot,
yeah.
it definitely felt real. Like there's times where the characters are like, we had time to kill, so we went over here and got a soda, and Dally went to go steal something but then didn't because he didn't want to be chased away, or you know, things mm-hmm. like that. Like those felt real, you know.
True but I think for what I'm describing is more the background.
Oh sure,
yeah.
Just like the aesthetics,
and maybe it's having kind of grown up in Almani. My grandma lived in LA, you know, not that I was, mm-hmm. I spent a lot, you know, we would go to East LA every now and then. I kind of pictured more of that type of urbanness, grittiness to it.
Well, it's also hard to tell because it's meant to be in Oklahoma too,
yeah,
so.
Which I'm not familiar with.
Yeah. Oklahoma's a bit more, I think where they are, it's supposed to be more like a small town.
Yeah, I figured, yeah.
And spread out, but like they're obviously close to a major city because they can get to the downtown where the hospital is and everything.
Yeah.
So. Because I know Oklahoma generally, just because my brother went to the University of Oklahoma, and so I know Norman especially, but then, you know, Oklahoma City and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can be in a small town and also be really close mm-hmm. to a major city, but then have, like, nothing in between. But you're, like, a bus ride or a car ride away,
mm-hmm.
which is how it used to be, you know, for a lot of towns. But
okay.
But it definitely is a much more of, like, middle-of-nowhere vibe.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm not familiar with. That's
yeah.
why. Okay.
Yeah, and definitely not here.
Yeah.
In LA.
Nope.
In the megalopolis.
Mm-mm.
Well, in the story, it gives you this feel of like a cabin fever.
Mm-hmm.
Where yeah. everyone's just kind of stuck there. Even like the people who are better off are kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
And so like you get frustrated with each other, and so then you start fighting each other because you're just stuck in this small town. That's the kind of feel I get from the story.
Yeah, and I think it like out here, I think it's just because where we've grown up, it's a very different area. So I don't understand.
Well, and then we're definitely
Midwest.
Much more independent.
Yeah, and now. Even if you want to get out, you can always leave the inner city and move out to the, like I said, the Inland Empire.
They find you.
Until, yeah. Well, not just that, but just in general, it's like there's always been that you escape,
mm-hmm.
you know. I can say for the last, how old am I? So maybe the last 30 years, I've actually been able to watch the demographics change.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And people move and move, you know, leave, and the environment change. So, but no, the cinematics of the movie, they were good,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't match my visualization, my personal visualization.
The one time I really did like his artistic style
mm-hmm.
is when he's reading the letter at the end, and how it shows,
yeah.
it shows Johnny, but like a normal Johnny.
Yeah.
Not narrating the letter. Mm-hmm. And then it shows Dallas like at his best, like a clip. Like,
that was a good scene.
So I thought like that was done well,
because
I think that's like the emotional hinge of the story.
Yeah.
And so I thought it worked really well for that scene. But there were definitely some shots in the film that were very cinematic that were nice to look at and I really mm-hmm. liked. But again, like you were saying, they weren't real.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was fun, I did not notice it this time around. In the book and the story in the movie, the characters, Johnny and Ponyboy, when they're hiding out in the church,
mm-hmm.
they're reading Gone with the Wind to each other.
Yes.
And, you know, there's this whole section where, you know, they talk about in the book about, like, the gallant soldiers going off to fight knowing that they're going to die mm-hmm. and stuff. And so, like, they like that idea, that, you know, the romanticism mm-hmm. of it and stuff. And so it kind of plays into them a little bit later on when they go and do their things later with the kids, but then also, like, going off to
the rumble.
Yeah, stuff yeah. like that. So like it plays a little bit into that. But because Gone with the Wind plays a little bit of a role in the story,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of funny that there was like the sunset scene felt very much like it was in Gone with the Wind, like with Scarlett O'Hara at the tree saying, "I'll never go hungry again." And
I've seen the scene, haven't seen the movie.
But then the credits for The Outsiders are an homage to the credits to Gone with the Wind.
I didn't know.
I'm assuming.
Okay.
Because the credits for both go across the screen in a very similar style.
One day we'll have to do that one.
Yeah. No, we definitely should do that one because there are some interesting differences.
Yeah.
But
I'll finally be able to watch the movie.
Yeah, but there's some other random little fun tidbits about the movie. Like, I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, he did try to make it more realistic, and like he did some like method directing with and like try to get some method acting and stuff like that, which is definitely a thing. But one of the things he tried to do is he tried to get Matt Dillon to spend a night in jail to understand the character of Dallas Winston better.
Yeah.
And Matt Dillon refused, and he's like, "You do it." But there's one thing I thought was interesting is he gave scripts to all the characters playing Socius.
Yeah.
Like, they were like leather bound scripts, and then he gave like ratty, just regular printed scripts to the greasers, and he would like treat them differently so that it would play out on set.
His own. Have you ever heard of the Stanford Prison Experiment? Do you remember that from your intro to psych class?
Tell me.
Where Stanford University was, Philip Zimbardo was a psychologist. And so the idea was, okay, randomly, you guys will be prison guards, you guys will be prisoners.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I do remember this, yeah.
Not to say it's the same thing at all, but it's invoking the same type of method. It's pulling from the same place, I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, that's actually kind of a interesting way of treating your actors to kind of get them into the role.
And that's definitely something that directors sometimes do. They'll do things like that. I've come across that even in theater.
Really?
And because it can help.
Okay. Yeah, I can see how
sometimes it can be a little dangerous, but it can be very helpful. Like, one of the other things he did is, I think part of this was unintentional, but it seemed like almost all the greasers lived in like the same hotel, like near each other, in like the rooms near each other.
Oh.
And so they pulled a bunch of pranks in the hotel on each other, so much that like the hotel hated it.
Oh, wow.
And later on, like, Tom Cruise and Rob Lowe had like apologized about it.
Yeah.
But they would pull pranks like, you know, the normal ones, they would saran wrap the toilet seat, and one of them was like, I guess they emptied out a fire extinguisher into someone's room.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like that. You know, there's pulling pranks on each other.
Yeah.
But part of that, I think, really comes out in the film because they have such a camaraderie in the film. Like, they really feel like friends. Like, especially like the way that guys can be with each other. Like, then you're just messing with each other and like buddy buddy and that sort of thing. And so I think that really helped.
Yeah.
But the intentional part that Francis Ford Coppola had with the Curtis siblings, like Ponyboy, Soda Pop, and Derry, is he actually had them, I think it was like a day, like stay in the house.
Oh.
With like just them.
Okay.
And like he told them, like, you're going to live here. I don't remember how many days. It may have just been a day, but he's like, you're going to live here together. And it's like, and you need to make meals together. And they like, none of them had done that before because they were like in their teens or like out in like in their 20s. But
yeah.
And so, like, they had that familial connection, like, even if it was, like, not perfect, because, like, it's not perfect in the book anyway. You
know? Yeah.
So I think some of that is cool, because it plays well into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was filmed in Oklahoma, so there's that. And one thing is, I guess the one character is wearing a Letterman jacket from the school that S.E. Hinton went to.
That's interesting. That's funny. I don't remember who was wearing a Letterman jacket.
It was one of the Socias.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Apparently, there was some scenes that were cut out and are not even in the deleted.
Yeah.
I mean, in the director's cut, which I'm kind of glad they are, because it sounds like, if this is true, there's scenes that are not in the book.
Oh, okay.
Like, I guess there's some added bits where it showed, like, there's like scenes where Tubit's being chased out by his mom with a broom and stuff like that, which is like stuff they mentioned, but it's not really explained in the book.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit where it showed, like, the Socias chasing after the greasers. And then, I guess, like, they go by Derry at work. And so he drops a bunch of stuff off the roof onto, like, the Socias' car. Which is, like, not in the book at all.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm kind of glad, like, if that's true, I'm glad they cut it.
Yeah.
But you can see, like, he wanted to be true to the book.
I got that feel.
And so my suspicion is, because I did come across this, because I guess there was a script, and then Francis Ford Coppola like said nah, and then he just wrote his own.
Interesting.
Yeah, but apparently the Writers Guild wouldn't give him credit for it.
Oh wow.
So again, I don't really know how all this plays out. Yeah. That does sound like something that would happen, but in regards to those deleted scenes, maybe those were scenes that were in the original script that he rejected.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But generally, the film is very true to the book. You know, it just cuts out a bunch of scenes, mainly the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Ponyboy's character. But other than that, any major changes?
Not that I can think of. I mean, for the pacing purposes, of course, I think the first four chapters were mm-hmm. nicely condensed, so you don't get that bored.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because the whole scare of them losing Ponyboy is not in the original film.
Yeah, they briefly mention it, and then they kind of just gloss over
it. It's in the director's cut. Like I said,
oh, is that part
there's 30 minutes cut okay. out. So, like, literally, if you watch the director's cut, it's the whole book.
Oh, okay.
So it is interesting to watch if you just want to, like I said, see the book come to life.
Yeah.
But literally, like, there's a bit where Ponyboy's cooking after he returns home and everything, and then they say he might have to go to a boy's home, like, if things go bad. Because, like, he's going to have people visit the house and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, never brought up ever again.
Yeah. I caught it, of course. I knew I had just finished reading the book, and so I was familiar with it. To be honest, I didn't miss it, like, emotion-wise in the story. Like,
sure.
It was one of those loose plot holes that just kind of I forgot about.
But I think it was important for his character because that was when he was like spiraling.
True, but they cut all that out. So there is no spiraling. I mean, you loosely see it kind of, but they really just cut all that part out. So that's why I think in regards to the movie, it worked. I think if they would have alluded to it more, that would have been a jarring ending.
Sure.
To have cut it out at that point.
Yeah, because I think in the, at least with the original 83 cut, it's almost as if Ponyboy doesn't really struggle.
Correct.
It's like he stays like a solid, for the most part, character and like doesn't really struggle. And so
it was more of a superficial struggle because they still allude to it, like when he's sitting in the car with Randy.
Well, it was like an external struggle than an internal.
Mm-hmm. It was almost like everyone was bringing his struggle up and he was just looking at them blankly.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because then I think the film, if we're just talking about the 83 version, the 83 version is definitely more focused on the gang at large.
Yeah.
Because that's the cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's whatever.
And in some ways, too, it's kind of that impression. So this is the impression I got, was it's kind of like when you're watching something, you're the observer, you see it in life, and then you talk to the person who's involved or the person you've been watching and you give them a big piece of advice or something that might be profound and they kind of look at you dumbly and you have no idea whether they took it to heart or not.
Sure.
And so in many ways, that's kind of how I felt watching Ponyboy in this movie, was all these people are dropping all these little advice and hints to him. I mean, we know as the audience, and especially if you've read the book, that, I mean, you kind of know as the audience if you've never read the book by his writing the essay. But as any of us who read the book know what happened. And so I kind of felt like I was watching that random person you met or acquaintance and you've given them a major word, you know, major words of wisdom, and they're just looking at you dumbfounded and you walk away and you never know what ends up happening.
Yeah.
It was really interesting because as much as I think as I grew to appreciate and really like the book, whereas I would read, probably not invest time in reading the book again anytime soon, if at all, I probably would put the movie on in the background and watch it.
Hmm. It was interesting because the movie does a little bit of its own world building separate from the book. And it's like stuff that's kind of mentioned in the book, but it like really fleshes out in its own way in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's at least true to the book. It's just the book doesn't explain it. So it's just here's how we interpreted this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so like in the beginning, when you see, you know, Johnny and Ponyboy meet up with Dallas, all the stuff that the antics they get into and stuff, like that's none of that's really in the book, but it's stuff that's believable, you know?
Yeah.
And,
it is.
And then like, even with, was it 2-Bit out at the drive-in? Like he's like screwing around, messing with people and saying things he shouldn't.
Yeah.
And then like lifting up a girl's skirt to mess with her, you know, stuff like that. Like that's stuff that's not really in the book, but it's believable because of the character, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like that in the movie that you're like, this feels like it should be in the book, but it's not in the book, but I'm okay with it because it feels true.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the one thing I really did miss from the film, and I just, it's difficult to do because one, I don't think it's Francis Ford Coppola's style. I don't think it was really a thing until like more modern filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting. I think they would screw it up now, but but it'd be interesting to see what somebody would do with it now. Because I'm, you know, when you watch movies like Wes Anderson or things like that, where like they bounce around in time and place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this film would have benefited from that.
Because
like, in the book, there's times where Pony Boy, because it's from his perspective,
he'll
say things like, oh, when they go to the church, like, I haven't been in a church since I went with 2-Bit and a couple other guys because nobody else would go with me. But then I was too embarrassed to go back because one of them was goofing off and dropped a Bible during prayer and everybody looked at us and I felt bad about it.
Yeah.
It's like there's things like that that are missing from the movie that flesh it out and flesh out the characters in the world. But they don't need to be in there, but they would have been really fun and interesting. And I think there is a way to film that. It's just it wasn't what they were doing then.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think the characters, they were a lot flatter.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely were. You know, ironically, as I said, I would probably, if the movie was on, I would watch it. I would. It's not that I like the movie better.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the book better.
Mm.
But.
Well, it's like on passive viewing, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. It's not a...
Because it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. It's not a judgment of either of the two of them.
Yeah.
It's more of just where they stand and how viewable they are.
Did you know in the scene for the drive-in that he actually fell off that chair and their reactions were real?
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if you look, the actor who plays Ponyboy looks right at the camera and laughs.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't expect him to fall.
Yeah, that's funny.
They just kept it in. Yeah, there's like, you know, small changes, like character descriptions changed for the movie because they went with who was best for the role, not just who looked like the character.
I also imagine their hair longer.
But you also have to think about it from the 60s, right? For guys?
Yeah.
Like if you weren't a part of a countercultural movement, your hair was short.
Mm-hmm. But I pictured it longer in the sense of like, almost like down to your shoulder at least.
Oh, sure.
But kind of like curled up at the... Is this the nape of the neck?
Yeah, but that really wasn't a greaser thing. Like, their hair was long, but it was, like, heavily oiled and manicured and...
It's just the way they talked about how long their hair was.
But that's all subjective, right?
Yeah. So I think part of it was what my imagination created.
So in that was then, this is now, even the greasers talk about a hippie character saying his hair's long. Mm. Like, longer than theirs.
Okay. I think it's just in my mind, I stopped equating them with grease.
Yeah.
Or that type of look.
Yeah.
And so I kept on picturing long...
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know where I got that perception from, considering now that I think about
it. Well, because I think it's a more modern perception.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because their hair was long compared to, like, the Stoshes.
Yeah, that guy pictured them with,
in the
like, 50s,
the 50s and 60s, like, it was definitely more militaristic haircuts from guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to have longer hair in general...
Yeah.
Was just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their hair, and you see this in both the book and the movie, their hair was their pride.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like they liked being able to get it the way they looked. And so like they were always running their combs through it and getting it right and, you know, stuff like that. But that's also like why, you know, the Socs go after them. They're like, there's a whole bit about like, I'm going to wash that grease out of your hair and give you a haircut.
They're drowning him. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a haircut greaser and all that stuff, you know. Because then you're taking away their pride.
Yeah.
And also, like, their social statement and stuff.
Yeah. I think it was just the way my mind created the picture. Yeah. That was all. Yeah.
Well, because, you know, you come to it from a different time and culture, so.
Yeah. And I really didn't think about, like, honestly, I didn't Google a picture or anything like that. I kind of just came at it. Keep in mind, too, I was reading it with reluctance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reading it with reluctance. I'm kind of conjuring the pictures I had as a high schooler, what in my mind they thought I was thinking of. And I didn't really...
Guys had some long hair in the 90s, though.
Yes. And I wasn't really pinning a time and a place. It wasn't until later on when we were doing research, or when I was doing research, I realized, I don't know what my mind was picturing at the time.
Well, because you know what's funny is I was familiar with the 80s movie. And so for some reason, as a kid at 13, I unintentionally equated The Outsiders with the 80s.
Oh, I see.
And so in my brain, I had to wrap my brain around the fact that this is the 60s, not the 80s.
Yeah.
Because when you read it, it doesn't really say. It doesn't really matter, mm-hmm. but it is specific to that time and place.
Correct.
And so, you know, I was viewing them a little differently because of that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we both kind of just came, I'm sure, like with most books, you come at it with what is in your head and or what's going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with this one, because like I said, I was so reluctant.
Sure.
It just drew back all those memories from high school and having to read this horrible book. And I do recant my original assessment. I will say.
I like to hear that.
Maybe I also conflated it with another movie.
Which one?
I know. I'm trying to think of the name. It's something where they're always yelling out this one.
You think about The Warriors?
The Warriors, yes.
Oh, I didn't like that movie. I get why it's popular, but okay. I don't like that movie.
I don't remember liking it, but I don't remember it completely. I wonder if I conflated it.
It's a dumb fun watch. But
is it?
Because it's just dumb.
It's not the same era or anything.
No,
similar,
it came out in
right?
the 70s. Okay. And it's about a bunch of New York gangs. Which were real, mm-hmm. but it's like over the top. And
okay.
It's like the gangs ruling the city and like very specific themed gangs.
Oh, I wonder if I don't remember the movie completely, but I'm wondering if I conflated the two.
It's one of those movies that a very specific subculture likes the Warriors.
Okay.
I'll say that. And so I can see why people who might like The Outsiders would like the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But they are different.
Okay.
The messages are very different. The Warriors is definitely more pro-gang.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that's what I was also thinking about. Because I had that, I think I had scenes from that movie in my head too.
Because even in The Outsiders, mm-hmm. it's very much like we wouldn't be greasers if we didn't have to be.
Yeah.
But this is who we are, we're embracing it.
Okay.
Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's why characters like Derry and Ponyboy... like they expect more of each other because they know they can have it if they work at it.
Yeah.
And the others are okay with it and like they support them in having more.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other characters like Soda Pop, they're like, yeah, I just know who I am and I'm okay with where I'm at, but I want you to have more.
Okay.
Which I like.
Mm-hmm.
So like they will get into trouble, but they also like try to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Whereas there are other people, like, I can't remember the one guy's gang who always gets in
Kim
trouble.
Shepherd?
Yes. Yeah. Like, his gang, they're like, stay away from his gang.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we only deal with his gang if we have to.
Yeah. And they did for the Rumble.
Yes. But like Dallas got into it with him.
The night of the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun because it's definitely like viewing another culture, you know? Like you can...
It is.
I obviously, there's things about it I don't like and like I won't emulate.
Of course.
But I really do appreciate some of it by being from their perspective, you know?
Yeah.
Like their own idea of justice and their own moral codes and things like that. Like it's really interesting to look at, you know, and to read about.
Yeah, maybe I should. I'm going to go buy some grease for my hair after we're done.
We might be able to pull it off.
I probably could. Especially, I can look like a... Well, I don't want to look like a cholo. As long as I don't look like that, I'm good.
Yeah, well...
I look more like a gardener right now than I do anything else. I'm all cash. So, and not my best shoes. But no, it's... I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we watched the movie. I'm glad we read the book. Mm-hmm. Once again, thanks to you, I would never have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Did they make a separate piece into a movie?
I don't know. Maybe a made-for-TV movie.
You
know what's funny is when I read this when I was younger, and even for a long time, I did not realize how young a lot of these characters are.
Okay.
Literally, all of the characters are teenagers except for a select few.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when you're younger and you're that age, it seems so old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for like a 13-year-old, that's 1 year younger than Ponyboy in the book.
Yeah.
But Ponyboy feels so old, in part because of the way he talks. But even the other characters feel really old.
Yeah.
But when you're my age now, 32, and I read it, I realized, oh, they're really young.
Yeah.
They're high schoolers,
mm-hmm.
which I logically understood, but now I really understand.
Of course.
Because Derry is the one that freaked me out, because I remembered him in my head being much older, but in the book, he's 20.
Yeah.
Like barely out of high school, mm-hmm. lamenting that he could not go to college.
Yep.
And he has to do manual labor to support his brothers.
Yeah.
And like he could have gone to college,
mm-hmm.
but now he can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there's that whole guilt with Ponyboy, because he's like, if it wasn't for me, he could go to college.
Yeah.
Basically. Which again is missing from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of layers and subtext and psychological elements that are missing from the film.
Well, once again, that's why I think we would usually recommend reading.
Yes.
Reading the book if there is one versus just watching the movie.
Yeah. And like I said, if you like the book, watch the director's cut.
Yes.
Which it's like the complete novel or whatever he calls it.
I think there
it.
Was only once where we said you could skip the book.
Yeah, which was that?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, because it's so different. and the book is...
And maybe Rats and M.
Well, you like the book.
I love the book. But no, in this case, I would definitely say it's almost like... So for today's generation, if you've read Harry Potter and watched the movies and you know the difference, think of that.
You know what's funny, though, is I think the best scene in the film,
mm-hmm.
I think just in general and like focus on the book, the best scene in the film is the drive-in scene.
At the beginning?
Yeah. Because I think it hit all the right notes of the book and it had enough of the lines
yes.
and the characters
felt
real. If
you're comparing it to the book, yes. I think the rest of it was more cinematic.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most true to the book in the sense that mm-hmm. even what was added in, you could picture it in your mind happening in the book.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that one was probably the best scene.
Okay.
Out of the original 83 cut. There's a lot of small things they add in that I think really work towards the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember even being younger laughing at Rob Lowe getting out of the shower practically naked when, like, all the guys are over.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, why is that even in the film? Because that's not in the book, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's getting ready in the book, but, like, why are you showing this? And then I realized this time around, I think they showed that to show how comfortable he is with all these other guys.
Yeah.
And like them, like, they're not messing with him. Like, it's almost like they're all family.
Yes.
But closer almost, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I definitely appreciate what he was trying to do and, like, staying true to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think there's some things that you can't translate as well.
Mm.
But I do appreciate what he did, and I think it's generally a good movie.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, so book and movie. What are your favorite characters?
I think my favorite character in the book was definitely... Of course, I mean, Ponyboy's the main character, but I really liked Johnny's character.
In the book, it's Ponyboy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just straight up Ponyboy. Like, I wanted to be Ponyboy as a kid.
Yeah, no, and I could see that because you resonated with the character. I since I didn't really resonate with anyone, I think for me, just seeing what he went through psychologically with his parents,
right,
and then
yeah.
and kind of seeing the whole arc of his life, as short as it was, really impacted me. In the movie, though, Derry. Just watching that whole arc.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
The tragicness of it, I think, is really what.
Well, you're also closer to his age, too. And I think that you've experienced some of the things he experienced. Just in that, like, you know, as an adult with a kid, like, there are things that you
probably
have to do to take care of your kid. And whereas that's nothing that Ponyboy has to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, it's actually things that Ponyboy comes to learn mm-hmm. in the book.
I think that's why, because I resonated with his, like, I know they do it so much better in the book, of course, in regards
right.
to how Ponyboy sees it versus what there. And I did read that they mm-hmm. expound it more on the novel, the director's cut, if you will.
You should try watching the director's cut just once.
Okay, I'll have to.
Yeah, because like I said, it's the book.
Okay. Yeah, I really, and just seeing kind of, and even though he was more peripheral in the book, I mean, in the movie, and secondary though would be Deli, and watching his.
Well, Matt Dillon does a good job.
He did. I really liked watching his character unfold.
It's funny because in the book, she does not shy away from explaining things that the characters do that are negative.
Mm.
But it's so off the cuff that it doesn't have the gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you watch it, it has the gravity.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because there's like a balance there. And so when you're watching it, like you watch them do things and you're like, I don't like that. But there are things that they did in the book, sometimes worse in the book. But but it hits different.
Yeah, it does.
And so it's just funny how you view them differently, you know?
Yeah.
In the movie, though, I think I found Ponyboy more annoying in the movie.
Okay.
I realized this time around reading the book how young Ponyboy is. Because, again, I viewed him much older when I was younger.
Okay.
Even when I was his age or a little older, like, I viewed him older. And this time around, I realized how young he was. And I realized how well written he is. Because she writes his character growing and realizing how young he is in the book. And I liked that a lot.
Okay.
Whereas in the movie, he felt kind of flat.
Yeah, he did.
And it felt just like, okay, this is the next plot thing. I need to talk about this thing now kind of thing. And so, like, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't the same. It was much simpler. And so I think in the film, I would agree it would either be Dallas or I actually think Cherry.
That's true. Yeah.
Because I think Diane Lane did a great job.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think she did too.
And she definitely has to toe that line where, like, you see much more going on underneath her. And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Like, even with the scene where she talks about coming to help them figure out the rumble. When he says you should go visit Johnny and she says she can't.
Yeah.
In the movie, she does a really good job of all that subtext. Like, that's the one time the movie does a really good job, I think, with the subtext.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. And she's a funny character because in the book, especially, you're viewing everything basically from Ponyboy's perspective. And so it's like, I don't get her, you know?
Yeah.
But I like her kind of thing. Because there's that whole bit where she's like, she can't stand Dally, but she's like, I think I could fall in love with him. And I think she plays that very well in the film.
Yeah.
And so it's believable. Because I think that can be difficult to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It would have to be maybe her or him. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
So ratings then. Book and movie. One being, I wish I could have not taken part of this at all. And 10 being just the best. I don't want to give anything to 10. Just 10 being the best.
See, this is hard because let's say like a 6.5.
Okay. Okay. That's not bad. Again, that's on the higher half. So I'll take that.
Yeah.
And the film?
The film, probably about a 5.
Okay. I'd be interested to see what you would, to hear what you would say once watching the director's cut.
Okay.
Again, I think the director's cut is good and it gives you everything in the book, but I do agree it does kind of drag.
Okay.
It definitely, the director's cut is good. It definitely feels like an old 70s movie where it's like, okay, get to the point, move on.
Yes, okay. That makes sense. 70s movies did tend to drag a lot.
A little bit. And had weird music. I think for the book, when I was younger, I might have given it a 10.
Okay.
But now, I actually, again, because I think I'm older and I have different eyes and different experiences, I think I still really love the book and I'll definitely probably read it maybe a few more times in my life. But I liked it a little bit less just because the more negative aspects of the book. But I think I might give the book maybe an 8 or 9. How about 8.5?
All right.
8.5.
Sounds good.
The movie, I think I'll give a... What did you give? 5? I think we have a 6.
Okay.
Because it's rewatchable.
Yeah.
And it's fun if you just want to kind of watch it. And I think it can be emotional at times. And it's much simpler. But I think it's still a decent movie, and like it's a movie that I would watch again.
Okay.
Okay, well, you already know what I think about adaptations, but this is the part of our episode where we talk about what type of adaptation is this.
Yes.
So the adaptations that I've come up with are the 4. The first one is true to source material. The second is expanded. Third is artistic. And the last one is message driven.
Correct.
So, you already know that I think this is true to source material.
I have to agree. Okay. I didn't really see anything else. I mean,
and it seemed like that was his goal, so.
Especially since he redid a director's cut. Even more so, true to source material.
But it also reminds you how much of a business Hollywood is, though.
Yeah.
In that, even if you're the director of something, you really, it's not just whatever you want to do.
Nope, you're beholden to the studio.
Yep. Yeah, it's a give and take, and it can be frustrating. My question for you then would be, before today, before this last reading of the book, when you used to tell me all the time, oh, I hate The Outsiders, I never want to read The Outsiders.
Probably would have given it a zero.
Really? No, you would not.
Yeah, probably. I had no desire to ever read that book again.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give a separate piece one, and I probably would have given Great Gatsby one.
I'm very impressed you gave it a 6.5.
It was very
different. Admit it, you really liked the psychological aspects of the book.
Yeah, I did. Once I got to that part. Mm-hmm. Once I got past the exposition.
Well, again, I'm glad that you enjoyed it as much as you did then.
Me too. That would have been a slog if I didn't. Not going to lie.
It seems like there's a lot more we could talk about this one, but I don't want to, you know, bog it down. But again, if you listeners out there, if you really enjoyed this and there was something you think we missed, mm-hmm. or you want to talk more about, you know, let us know. Definitely. And email us, comment, whatever, let us know. And maybe we'll do a revisited.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say before we finish this out?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Well, join us next time on
Willing to Adapt. Yes. Join us next time.
Join us next time on Willing to Adapt. We're so bad at this.
I know.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.